love, everybody. Ringo here. Beautiful day in LA. Talk. So, it was good to be able to kind of get it out in a song.
The whole, you know, origin of where we're all coming from.
I'm prepared for death because I don't believe in it. I think it's just getting out of one car and getting into another.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Talk More Talk, a solo Beatles videocast. I am one of your three co-hosts tonight. My name is Tom Hunyadi, and you may know me from my other show, Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. Tonight, we're going to talk about this bad boy, Men Love Avenue. We were supposed to get to it on our last episode, but we ran out of time. But before we get to that, I'm going to introduce to you my two other co-hosts for tonight. First up, she is the queen of all Beatles media and just celebrating her 21st birthday. She is Kit O'Toole. Hello,
that
Kit.
That was the correct answer, Tom. Correct. Thanks very much.
You got it.
As we all know.
Kit is the author of the songs we were singing book, guided tours through lesser known Beatles tracks, as well as the Michael Jackson FAQ. Kit, welcome aboard. Glad to have you back.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Ken. And hello, everybody.
We're also joined by our friend Ken Michaels. Now, as you may know, Ken Michaels hosts the show Every Little Thing, which he's on his, 36 year now, Ken?
It's coming up on 37.
March. Oh, yeah. Look at that. So getting ready to celebrate his 37th anniversary doing a show, which is on WNHU, which he'll find more, or he'll tell you more about a little bit later. He's also the co-host of Things We Said Today, the Beatles and Solo Beatles podcast, which he co-hosts with Darren DeVivo and who's the other guy's name?
Alan Cozen.
That dude.
That guy. Oh, Mr. Yes. Anyways. Like I said, today we're going to talk about the Men Love Avenue. We're going to get to that. But first, let's talk about Kenneth Womack. Unfortunately, he's not going to be able to join us tonight. He's had work-related issues, I believe it was.
Yes.
So no segment of Where's Womack tonight, unfortunately. But you can, you can probably guess anyways. But before we get to Men Love Avenue, here's Ken Michaels with the latest and greatest news.
Okay. Well, thank you, Tom. Kit, you don't look a day over 20.
Hey, also a good answer, Ken.
I'm suffering from Ken Womack withdrawal. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Anyway, Beatle News, Ringo Starr has added two more dates in the New York area with his all-star band for their 30th anniversary tour. Following their date in Bethel, New York on August the 16th, Ringo will play the Long Island Community Hospital Amphitheater, formerly known as the Penny Saver Amphitheater, at Baldhill in Farmingville, Long Island. And on August the 18th, he'll be at the Rooftop at Pier 17 in New York City. And that is in the South Street Seaport District. And both those shows went on sale to the general public last Friday. Okay, now this is great news. I'm sure you heard about this, that the documentary on the making of the John Lennon album Imagine, the documentary called John and Yoko Above Us Only Sky, which recently aired on Britain's Channel 4. That was when the new remastered archival box set for Imagine came out in October. It'll be shown in the US on the A&E channel as part of their biography series. And that will be next Monday. That's March 11th at 9 p.m., and that's Eastern Time. And you notice that they made sure they didn't conflict with our show on Monday night at 9 p.m. They made it the off week. And this documentary puts emphasis on the creative collaboration between John and Yoko, and it also includes interviews with Yoko. Julian Lennon is a part of it. Photographer David Bailey, gallerist John Dunbar, who introduced the couple, Lennon's personal assistant, Dan Richter, Studio designer Eddie Veal is also involved. The special is produced by Eagle Rock Films in association with the A&E Network. I have found out that there are no immediate plans for this to come out on DVD, which I was hoping for.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I was just going to ask you that question.
But I'm sure it's going to come out eventually, but it won't be very soon. Also, something that Tom always is aware of, Record Store Day, which he looks for. Speaking of the Imagine album, it's coming out on vinyl with all different takes and raw studio mixes. These are all taken from the Lennon box set.
Right.
And it's coming out April the 13th. There's a limit of 5,000 copies for that. Also, wonder if Tom, you know about this. For the collector, there's an EP of songs all co-written by Elvis Costello, including The Lovers That Never Were with Paul, and also songs with Burt Bacharach, Bob Dylan, and Johnny Cash. It's a four-song EP, only 3,000 copies were made. It's called Elvis Costello and the Imposters.
Yes, that's correct. Ooh. I didn't know that.
Wow.
For those of you that have to have everything, even though you probably have The Lovers That Never Were, you want to have it on this. It's coming out April 13th. Also, this is something surprising. There's a film, and I've never seen this film, folks. I wish I had, but it's called The Hours and Times. Came out in 1992. It's a fictional account of what might have happened between John Lennon and Brian Epstein when they went away for a weekend getaway in Spain in April of 1963. It's now getting a limited theatrical engagement in this country. And what's interesting is that Ian Hart, who went on to play John Lennon in Backbeat, played John Lennon here. And Backbeat came out 2 years after that. If you want to know where it's showing, you can go to this website. It's showtimes.com. Type in The Hours and Times in the name search and then put in your zip code. So if you want to see this movie.
It's very good. I've seen it.
You have.
Years and years ago, it was on VH1. But remember when they like actually played music and you know, remember that? It really was a well done film. I thought it was clearly on a budget. I mean, you can tell, and it's all in black and white. But, yep, it's all black and white. And, you know, it's almost like a play in a way. But I thought it was well done. Now, you know, it's imagining what happened when Brian and John went on that vacation. And it's a lot of intricacy in it in terms of personality and you know, who may have been manipulating who and, you know, that kind of stuff. But it's done in a very, I think, realistic way. So I would recommend it. I thought it was well done.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I thought Ian Hart was very convincing as John Lennon in Backbeat. Yep. So
this too.
Okay, very good. I'll look for it in my area. Another Lennon to talk about, the Claypool Lennon Delirium group. Their new album called South of Reality came out on February the 22nd, and they appeared on Stephen Colbert's show. I haven't heard the album yet, but I plan on getting it. I think you've gotten it, haven't you, Tom?
Yeah, I got the CD and the vinyl. The vinyl is really cool, color vinyl, and I definitely recommend it. It's really trippy and acid prog, you know, this psychedelic rock. You know, Claypool is a god on bass, and Sean's guitar work actually is really, really excellent on this album. So,
I've seen of Sean live, I'm very impressed with. He plays so many different instruments, and he plays them well.
Yeah,
and he's so diverse in all the music that he explores.
Yeah, but those two on the album. So
yeah, okay. Well, actually, I should point out that on my website, kenmichaelsradio.com, probably in a week or two, I'm giving away tickets to see the Claypool Lennon Delirium in New Haven, Connecticut.
Nice.
Okay, so keep that in mind. Another Lennon here to talk about, Julian. You know that he's been putting out a children's book, actually two of them so far. And he's going to have a three-book set coming out, with the third book coming out. The books have been called Touch the Earth, Heal the Earth, and Love the Earth, all about, you know, how to treat the environment, concerns for the environment, aimed at children. And this three-book set is coming out October the 1st. It's called the White Feather Flyer Box. Also, we all know, I think most of us have seen the movie I Want to Hold Your Hand. Yeah. It's being reissued again on Blu-ray, and that'll be on March the 26th. And also, the late New Orleans blues pianist and singer, Professor Longhair, has a new reissue coming out called Live on the Queen Mary. This was a concert recorded March 24th, 1975, on the Queen Mary cruise ship docked in Long Beach, California, at a party that was hosted by Paul and Linda. And they underwrote the album. Hmm. It's coming out on CD and MP3, and that comes out April the 5th. Hmm. All right. I think that we'll be, you know, exploring that. I'm sure, yes, some of us will probably try to get that. And I guess we should just say a few words here about Peter Tork. I don't know how much the two of you are Monkees fans, but we all know about the passing of Peter at the age of 77. Your thoughts about his passing? Why don't we start with you, Kit?
Well, I am a big Monkees fan, and I was fortunate enough to, I only got to see him twice, with the first time with, it was my Mickey, Davey, and Peter, the second time Mike, Mickey, Peter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think in a way he was really kind of the heart of the group. I mean, you know, his performances on stage were just, you know, he just looked like he so enjoyed performing, you know. Mm. He always had a big smile. He clearly loved what he did. He was also, you know, a great musician. And he also wrote one of my favorite Monkees tracks, Do I Have to Do This All Over Again? I love that. Okay. That's a great song. Whole soundtrack's great, of course. and it's just a shame. It wasn't a complete surprise. I had heard that he had been battling health issues for a while, but nevertheless, it's a sad loss. As I said, he was the heart of the group, and, It's not going to be the same without him.
Mm. Sure. Tom, you have a few words?
Yeah, well, you know, I can't say that I've ever been the biggest Monkee fan out there. I mean, I did see, you know, a few of their episodes on MTV when they were re-aired, and I do vaguely remember seeing them in the late 70s on whatever, you know, channel it was way back then. But I'll tell you what, you know, reading up lately a little bit about Peter Tork and the Monkees, and, you know, we all know that they were created for TV. And I gotta tell you, I do respect the fact that those four gentlemen, you know, especially Tork, you know, they fought for the right to play on those records. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, I respect the hell out of that. And I think that's a wonderful thing. I'm sure a lot of people out there know that he also played on George's Wonderwall music, but yes, his contribution can only be heard on the film and isn't on the soundtrack, unfortunately. So if you want to hear his contribution, you have to get the film, which I have back there somewhere on Blu-ray. So it's I think it's worth checking out if you haven't already. So
actually, you can go on YouTube and you can hear it.
Yeah,
it's only about 30 seconds of playing. He plays the banjo on there.
Right.
And I actually have a quote from George Harrison. He says, Peter Tork plays the banjo like he invented the instrument.
Wow.
Mm. Wow. Yeah. You know, and the other thing, too, is, you know, that people always thought that, oh, the Monkees and the Beatles must, or particularly the Beatles must have looked down on the Monkees and everything. They really didn't at all. You know, they were right. I mean, they said, I think it was John who said they were sort of the Marx Brothers of, music and all. And he didn't mean that in a negative sense. And they, you know, clearly respected them a lot. You know, who was there the night they recorded the orchestra for Day in the Life?
Right.
Mike, you know, Mike Nesmith.
Right.
You know, Mickey, great friends with Ringo. Of course, they and Harry Nilsson, you know, had a really, really interesting period in the, in the 70s.
Part of the Hollywood Vampires.
That's right, the Hollywood Vampires, you know.
I'll drink to that.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Is that a Brandy Alexander? I think that was their choice. but anyway, yeah, I mean, you know, I think that the Beatles had great, you know, affection for them, respect for them. Obviously, the Monkees had great respect for the Beatles, but it was the other way around, too.
Mm. I mean, like, Yeah, I think it was one of you, one of either Kit or Ken. I think one of you guys posted the picture of them, of those four, and they're looking at the Sgt. Pepper album, you know, marveling over it, or you know. So I can't remember. Yeah. Someone posted that picture, but it was pretty cool. And I did get to see them live. I think it was either for the 25th or the 30th anniversary, and it was Tor, Davey, and Mike. Was it Mikey? Dolan's, right?
Oh, Mickey.
Yeah.
Well, like you, Kit, I got to see three of the four of them together twice. Yeah. Never all four of them together. And I saw all four of them individually many times. Mm-hmm. I really love their music. I'm primarily a lover of the Monkees' music. I have most of their albums. I was never a big fan of the TV show. Please don't send hate mail, please.
But I think I'm sorry, man. You're fired from the show. I'm really sorry.
I will say that they had great chemistry on camera, without a doubt. The way they interacted with each other. And I think the Monkees really are the only other band besides the Beatles where you got to know each member and their personalities. Because you got to see the TV show. It was in your face every week for 2 years, and then later in syndication. Right. And just like you saw right on the screen, they had their names flashed right there. You got to know each of them individually. And that's really rare, because most bands that we've had in rock, you have a lead singer, you get to know him. The others, you might know their names, but they hardly ever talk. You don't ever get to see, you know, the personalities of other members of bands the way you did with the Beatles and the Monkees. And I think there are a lot of fans that identified with a specific Monkee, just like they did with the Beatles. Mm-hmm. You know, so, but the most important thing to me has always been the music.
Yeah.
And the music to me gets stronger through time.
Yeah.
The music of the Monkees. When I first liked the Monkees, I basically knew their hits. Once you get deeper into the album cuts, you realize how strong that catalog is. And as the Monkees have said many times on stage, they had the best songwriters, like from Brill Building. You couldn't get better than Carole King and Jerry Goffin, Neil Diamond, Neil Sedaka. They had David Gates for one song, for Saturday's Child. They even had Harry Nilsson. I mean, they really helped. Yeah, they helped Harry Nilsson launch his music career. He was working at a bank. It wasn't until the Monkees recorded Cuddly Toy that, you know, he could pursue a music career full time. So we thank the Monkees for that. I don't know the whole story how they came to record that song.
Yeah, that but, I'm not sure.
Yeah, but I love their music. And not only were they great songs and great songwriters, but it was all executed well. Whether they played their instruments, whether they had studio musicians, they're very well-produced records. They're great recordings. That's all that I can say about it. And, you know, nowadays, I listen to the album cuts of the Monkees so much more. You know, the Porpoise song is my favorite of all their songs. Carole King, you know, right there. But there's so many great songs that they recorded. And, you know, Peter's going to be missed. He was the most accomplished musician of the four of them. He played, the banjo and, of course, the bass and keyboards. And, and the Monkees are one of those few bands like the Beatles where each member also sang lead vocals.
Yep.
You know, how often does that happen?
Yeah.
It's a very small percentage of bands that are like that you can say that about.
Yep. Very true. We have a viewer, Robbie Strauss, who also points out, thanks for watching, Robbie, that Peter was the best musician in the group. He was definitely the most accomplished, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. No, but he will definitely be sorely missed. Mm-hmm. So, condolences to all the Monkees fans listening and watching. Okay.
All right. That's the news.
That's the news for now, unless you've got something.
No. Oh, I'm newsless today. Okay, so we're going to, as I said earlier, talk about Men Love Avenue. This was the third posthumous release in the John Lennon camp. Right, same year, 1986, as the Live in New York City release earlier in that year. This was released in November of 86. To talk about the chart, it did not, unfortunately, get chart in the UK, but it did go to 127 here in the States. So not really recognized as much as maybe Milk and Honey and Live in New York City was. But I want to bring up the question to both of you is, you know, why do you think it didn't get the attention it deserved? You know, and your feelings about the album to begin with. Ken, Michaels?
That's a real tough question. Because, you know, even Milk and Honey, if you think about it, didn't do as well as was expected. It didn't make the top 10 in America, even with all that anticipation of waiting a little more than 3 years for Milk and Honey. I think after a while, the public kind of grew a bit tired of the posthumous releases. You know, they're all worthwhile to me in their own way. What do you do with something where you've got older recordings? Can you release any of those songs as singles? Can any of those be pushed as singles? I couldn't really see any of those songs doing well as singles. It was just a collection of songs that were worthwhile in their own way. But, you know, it was really tough. I don't know how to answer that question because it's a very unusual release, Menlo Avenue was. You know, it's a hodgepodge of basically songs from two different albums from the sessions. For the most part, except Rock and Roll People.
I mean, it's got the feel of like an official bootleg release. You know, there's a lot with the, you know, with the outtakes and the unreleased tracks. You know, Kid O'Toole, how do you feel about Men Love Avenue?
Well, you know, I've thought about it too, because I mean, it definitely did not perform as well as Milk and Honey, and as you mentioned, Ken, Milk and Honey didn't do quite as well as was expected. You know, with this one, I think part of it was just poor promotion. I mean, why they put so little into promoting this album, I'll never understand. I mean, I don't remember, you know, I remember when Milk and Honey came out, and we talked about this a bit the last time. I mean, I saw the video for Nobody Told Me 1,000 times. I mean, I remember watching that as a kid, you know, and I think I'm Stepping Out. I think that was a video, you know, so they were really promoting it. I can't think of any video off of Men Love Avenue. I mean, it just sort of had a very quiet release. Now, it was interesting. I was reading some comments and see what you guys think. We were talking about singles a minute ago. I guess the single that was released was Rock and Roll People. And some critics think that that was the wrong single.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, that they said something like Angel Baby or Here We Go Again. So I kind of wanted to throw that out to you guys. Do you think that would have, and to the viewers, do you think that would have made a difference?
Yeah, I you know, I do really dig Here We Go Again. I mean, it's got that, you know, that 50s feel to the song, you know, with the help of, you know, co-written by Spector. And, you know, every so often, you know, and I believe that there, you know, there was a time in the 80s where that 50s, you know, music was hot at some point. And it happens like, so, you know, every 15 years when that decade, you know, just gets hot again and people, you know, appreciate that music. And I think that that would have been a good track to maybe release as a single if it was chosen, but, you know, not. Ken?
Well, I kind of agree with you. I hadn't really thought about what would be the best choice for a single. Rock and Roll People does rock, you know? I mean, at least it's an up-tempo song and everything. Here We Go Again is slow but building, and it's intense, and, you know, in the best possible way in a Lennon song. You know, so I love the song for that reason. And kind of like you said, Tom, every now and then people get into a 50s, you know, feel. So Angel Baby could have worked. You know, it's just, it's like when Milk and Honey came out, you knew Nobody Told Me was the single. You know, that's like it leaped at you. You had, there's no question about it. You had to pick Nobody Told Me. It's not like I can listen to Men Love Avenue. I wouldn't have picked anything from the Walls and Bridges material. To be a single, it would have to be something on the first side. But probably Here We Go Again or Angel Baby would have made the best choices. But it's tough to say. I mean, Stand By Me made the top 20 in 1975. Does that mean Angel Baby could have made the top 20? I don't know. And yet Stand By Me was a hit again, you know, when the movie came out. So it's tough to say.
I have to agree, you know, and this is why Mean Mr. Mayo and I really get along, because I'm in 100% agreement with him. I love Rock and Roll People, and I thought that was a good choice for a single. I am surprised that it didn't do as well. I mean, I just this morning. It was so funny, you know, as I was getting dressed, that song was running through my head. So catchy, great energy to that song. Yeah. And I mean, that's why it was never released until Melrose Avenue. I'll never get it. I mean, it's, right. That's a lost gem. And I thought that was a great choice for a single, because the problem with Here We Go Again, you know, I like it a lot, but as you said, Ken, it's very slow building, you know, and it pays off. Right. You know, off at the end. But for a single, I don't know if it would, you know, immediately grab the listener to then want to go and purchase this album. Whereas Rock and Roll People, I just thought was upbeat. It was, you know, as I said, it was catchy. So so I don't know. But obviously they did use that as the first single and it still didn't do well. So I don't know.
Tom Brennan wrote in. And he said it was great to get Here We Go Again and Rock and Roll People officially released, because at the time we had never heard them before. Actually, right. Rock and Roll People had been released, but not by John.
Oh, okay. Well,
Johnny Winter recorded a version, which is on his album John Winter Dawson III, which came out in 1974. I used to play it all the time on the radio. That was like a leftover track from
Mind Games.
From the Mind Games album, So the song there, and I believe it was all because of Shelly Yakis, the engineer, suggesting that to Johnny Winter to record that.
Okay, fair enough. Well, you know, bouncing off what Tom had wrote, you know, the concept of this album, I mean, would this have worked better as an album of unreleased tracks? I mean, if we didn't know about, you know, Here We Go Again, would there have been other tracks out there? I mean, especially the songs like Do the Oz, we knew that was out there, but I don't think it was on any official, you know, John album or not at that point in time. Would this have worked better if it was an album of unreleased tracks, you think, or are you fine with the way it is?
I'm really torn, because on the one hand, it is a very kind of scattered album in a way. It is kind of all over the place. You know, some of it's from the Rock and Roll Sessions, some of it's from Walls and Bridges, which I think is an incredibly underrated album of John's. And we'll probably get to that in another episode. But I love the alternate takes on this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and so technically you could say, well, we've heard these songs before, so these are just different, earlier versions. You know, why do we need to hear these again? I think they really bring some, new perspective,
right,
onto the songs, and I'm glad that they came out. So, in that case, I would say I'm actually, you know, happy with the way it is. I think a lot of it was just marketing kind of clarify what this was.
Right. Yeah. I mean, as we were talking about the Imagine box set, it's really about, you know, for me and, you know, Ken, you've talked about it too. I mean, it's the evolution of the song. I mean, when first time I've heard, you know, these Walls and Bridges tracks, I mean, or cuts, I mean, or, you know, I was really impressed, and especially with the vocals, you know, and I think that the vocals in John's raw state are really what, you know, impresses me the most about these tracks. So, Ken?
Yeah, well, first of all, in terms of sales, I think sales were slowing down anyway with John's releases. So I wasn't expecting it to do well. I would have loved for every posthumous John Lennon release to be in the top 10 or at number one. I don't know if we certainly didn't know about all the other unreleased songs in John's archives. Certainly what was out on the Lost Lennon tapes, a lot of the songs that he wrote in the late 70s that we didn't even know about at that time. But this is a very interesting release. I love all these people writing in that Here We Go Again is a Lennon treasure. Michael Rice, thank you. A lot of people discovering that song, and that's great.
Yeah.
But the thing about this album is it's a strange release, only because it isn't just the fact that you've got one side that's primarily rock and roll music, the other side primarily Walls and Bridges, but the rock and roll stuff are like complete studio takes that could have gone out that way to begin with. Although My Baby Left Me Really sounds like very loose. It's kind of like the Beach Boys party album.
Yeah.
You know, anybody joining in, clapping hands, and the call and response stuff in there. But the Walls and Bridges stuff is so different in the sense that they don't sound like complete outtakes, like near complete versions of the songs on Walls and Bridges. They sound like first run-throughs.
Yeah, yeah. That's very, the word I was going to use.
Very laid back. You know, like they're working through the songs at the very beginning or after the first few takes. It has more of that feel to it. And yet many of those songs, in terms of the compositions, are complete still. There's some words there that John messed up on Steel and Glass, for example. Right. But for the most part, those songs were kind of complete early on in terms of composition. But it's kind of like, here's the band members. Let's work through the songs. The very beginning of the sessions, that's what it sounds like. It doesn't sound like Walls and Bridges outtakes that you might have heard on the Lost Lennon tapes or on the Lennon Anthology box set, you know, that are very close to what eventually came out. These were far more laid back, and they worked that way. Certainly certain songs like Bless You really work that way, or Nobody Loves You When You're Down and Out works like that, you know, Old Dirt Road. Those are all fairly mellow songs.
Yep, absolutely. You know?
But it's a different approach in putting out the Walls and Bridges music that way, as opposed to close to what the final take was in outtakes.
Right. Yeah, pretty impressive lineup for those sessions. You got Keltner, you got Lennon, you got Jesse Ed Davies, and Klaus Voormann. You know, that's a pretty cool band right there. you know. You know, another question on this, you know, we've heard Danny talk about how, you know, George didn't like, you know, scraping the bottom of the barrel, would, you know, as he put it. Do you get the sense that this release is scraping the bottom of the barrel? Because I really don't. I think there's a lot of interesting stuff on this album to keep people's attention. Kit?
Yeah, you know, it's funny that you mentioned this, because as I was doing research for this episode, I saw that was a discussion on, I think it was on like a YouTube video or something, and it was, you know, was it ethical to release stuff, you know, that some of it was clearly, you know, they were, as you just said, run-throughs, testing stuff out. Would he have wanted that released? And you know, I probably, somebody said that, you know, this album is more for the hardcore fan, which is probably that's fair enough. But I don't think there's anything here that would embarrass him in any way. In fact, I think his voice is incredibly strong on this album. You know, it really is. I'm just amazed with these different cuts, and, you know, and this was supposed to be, you know, the Lost Week, part of it was the Lost Weekend, and, you know, that sort of thing. Right. But he sounded great. So, you know, it really gives us a window into his process and, you know, his creative process. So, you know, I don't think there's anything here that would embarrass him.
I agree. Ken?
Well, you know, when it comes to John's vocals, I could take them at his worst, because I'm still going to love them. I don't know. It's maybe I'm partial here. Even when John was drunk, he still had a great voice in the studio. That's just my opinion there. But I think I've said this on the previous show. I might have said it. But I don't envy people like Yoko or Olivia and having to have to decide what should be released, what John would approve of, what George would approve of. How do you know how they would feel? You got to figure that they're the wives. They know them better than anybody else. The thing is, how do you know how John would feel today, being close to 80, with any of the releases that Yoko puts out? George is more consistent in what he said. John, I think that they were both very sensitive to their work. They wouldn't just want anything to come out.
Right.
You know, and, but, you know, I'm very partial here. I think that, when it comes to John's stuff, I like everything that Yoko has put out. I don't think she's ever put out anything that would embarrass him. The only thing that I think, and I know I brought this up, is you know how sensitive John was about his vocals and that he liked to doctor it up and, you know, and put reverb on it. And a lot of what Yoko has done are his raw vocals. So you don't know how John would feel about that. I love it. I'm sure everybody listening to this show loves it. But I don't know how John would feel, but you just have to trust Yoko's judgment or Olivia when it comes to George, when it comes to all this stuff. There's nothing here that I would find embarrassing. Of course, you get to hear the other material that was done from these sessions, like in the case of Rock and Roll. And what seems like every Beatle fan is doing these days online is every time that you learn about the bonus material on the solo albums, you start thinking, well, this other material, that was better than this other song that made it on the album.
Right.
So what do you take off on the original album?
Right.
You know, to me, Angel Baby should have been on Rock and Roll. Yeah. I think so anyway.
Right.
And I can say that, you know, I know a lot of people don't like it when you cover a song and you slow it down. Mm-hmm. And John did that a lot during the Rock and Roll sessions. Most of the time, I loved it. I love the slower down version of Sweet Little 16, for example, or Just Because. Mm-hmm. But To Know Her Is to Love Her doesn't seem to work that way.
Right.
For me. That's just my opinion. You know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. It's a little too busy what they're trying to do with that version of To Know Her Is to Love Her. So I can understand why that wouldn't make Rock and Roll. Also, Be My Baby, which ended up on the Lennon Anthology box. That was slowed down a lot, and it didn't have the punch that it needed to me. I don't think it worked as well.
Right.
Like I said, there are some songs that John slowed down that I love, but definitely I think Angel Baby should have made it.
I agree with you on the Knower Is the Lover, and you know, especially after the kick-ass job he did with it on the BBC years, the one that we got on that BBC CD, I think is perfection. Oh, you know, one of his early just masterpiece vocals, really. You know,
it's one of the greatest of the Beatles BBC performances.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Kit, you were let's lead Rob's here. I remember from Lennon, from the Walls and Bridges sessions, and John's vocals were always strong and upfront, unprocessed, and that's what makes this album so fine. True. This is what Lewison reported once after he had worked on Lennon's tapes. John was a bad judge of his own voice, and yes.
Amen.
Very, very true. Uh-huh. Very true. And I think we're getting a sense of that after all of these, you know, the Imagine, and then, you know, hearing, you know the Lennon Anthology as well. We're getting a sense of his vocals, and yeah, they're great, you know, even on the bad day, like you said, Ken. You know, Kit, you were moderating 2 weeks ago when we were doing the Milk and Honey. We were hoping to get to Men Love Avenue. Did you have anything about Men Love that you wanted to bring up?
Well, you know, I think that actually we talked about this just a minute ago, but sort of, you know, didn't finish our thoughts on it. So, as I said, you know, much of this material was recorded, you know, during the Lost Weekend period. I mean, not, you know, it's not every one of it, but so, you know, we've always heard, of course, the Lost Weekend. It was, you know, he was out of control, and of course, we know about the Rock and Roll sessions with Phil Spector and how crazy those were. And I mean, you know, it just sounded so just like, you know, how could he have possibly been creative? Yet when you listen to this album, you know, you really don't get that sense. And I just wanted to know, you know, what did you guys think about how, you know, how this fits into to his career and to this, into, you know, this period of his, you know, the mid-70s of his career. You know, what does Men Love Avenue show about that?
Ken?
Well, it shows that there's some other material that were not released. But what you were saying right now, it's kind of like the argument that May Pang has brought up many times during the Lost Weekend period. Yeah, you can look at Walls and Bridges and Rock and Roll and even Mind Games to some degree. But he also did Goodnight Vienna with Ringo. And he also did Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds with Elton John. And he also did Fame with David Bowie. And you add all that together, and Pussycats with Harry Nilsson. It was a very productive period for John. I definitely think so. I've always said that, you know, and I love John's entire catalog, don't get me wrong. That middle period is my favorite period of his. I love Mind Games and Walls and Bridges back to back. They're two killer albums. And I know that John did say that Plastic Ono Band and Imagine were, you know, two great albums. And then he didn't really have a great album again until Double Fantasy. Baloney. Mind Games and Walls and Bridges are great albums. And I think Rock and Roll is a fun album. And I like, you know, the Lennon songs and some of Yoko's songs on Sometime in New York City as well. But no, I love this whole period of Mind Games, Walls and Bridges, and Rock and Roll. Yeah. Very busy time. So now that you add in Here We Go Again and Angel Baby and My Baby Left Me and Rock and Roll People, you know, To Know Her Still Love Her, you got more material there.
Right. Yeah. That period, you know, after maybe getting out of under the influence of Yoko musically, I felt that these two releases may have been a little more commercial than what the Plastic Ono Band and Imagine were. So I think maybe he was kind of headed towards that route of you know, looking to his past and you know, like I said, getting out of the you know, influence of Yoko's you know. I'm losing the word that I'm trying to think of right now, but I like the direction he was going in. Who knows if he would have stuck in that direction, if he would have stuck with May Pang and not got back with Yoko, but it seemed like he was having a great time working with Elton John, like you said, and David Bowie, and, you know, getting his first number one working with David Bowie, you know, and then getting his first, you know, solo number one with working with Elton John. You know, I would imagine that, yeah, it was a lost long weekend. You know, that was a pretty kind of a long period as well, but you know, he seemed like he was having fun doing it. You know, he may have been missing Yoko, but he seemed like he was having fun.
Yep, I agree, and you know, that's what really stood out for me with Mon Love Avenue, that his voice just sounds so strong here. You know, and I mean, as I said, you read the crazy stories about, oh, they were all in the studio and they were drunk and they didn't get anything done, and you know, and I mean, you know,
sometimes they were
absolutely, but it clearly wasn't all the time, and he, you know, just was absolutely just on point with his voice on you know, virtually every track. And it just, to me, I think that Men Love Avenue is a great illustration, as both of you have been saying, of how creative he was during this period that he did of this verse. And yes, as Tom, you just said, I, you know, being away from Yoko and all, he did have a bit of a different sound, you know, maybe going back to his rock and roll roots, and not just on the rock and roll album, but on some other tracks as well. And, you know, so he was exploring different directions. So I think this is a really great snapshot. However, you know, Here We Go Again, I have to bring this up again, but as we've already talked about, but to me, that sounded like it even could have been on, you know, the Plastic Ono Band album. I mean, there were some elements of the Primal Scream kind of vocal on that track. So, so he wasn't quite done, you know, with songs that were influenced by Yoko. Right. But yeah, it's really, I think, an interesting snapshot of this period, and I think kind of refutes a lot of rumors that persist to this day about that period, the lost weekend.
Right.
Well, definitely the whole idea of him being as prolific as he was, I would attest to that easily from this period. I don't understand what you mean by a different sound at this time, other than from the Rock and Roll Sessions, the Phil Spector sound. Because to me, like, Mind Games is similar to Imagine.
Yeah,
an album to me.
Right.
So, yeah, but definitely it was an amazing period, I think. 73 through early 75 there.
Right.
I love that period the most. Mm. You know, and talking about Plastic Ono Band, that was anything but a commercial album.
Right.
There's no big hit on there.
Yeah.
You know, I can hear Mother on American Top 40 radio here.
Right.
But, so he wasn't striving for that. But definitely with Imagine, it was much more commercial.
Right.
Yeah. You know, as he put it, sugar coated. And there could have been more hits from the Imagine album, definitely.
Right.
Mm. Yeah.
Right. Well, speaking of cuts, was there any standout tracks here for, I mean, I know we've talked about, you know, Here We Go Again and Rock and Roll People. From the Walls and Bridges side B, did you guys enjoy, what's something that stands out to you on side B, Ken?
Bless You. Sounds really nice. It just works so well. It's a soft song to begin with.
Right.
But it's just so laid back, and you know, you just feel like you're right at home in the studio with him, just working through the song. And it's, like I said, it's very close to what eventually turned up on Walls and Bridges. All of them, really. Nobody Loves You When You're Down and Out is a standout. You know, I just love the feel of that side too.
Yeah,
I agree. It's all, like I said, laid back in that
more mellow.
Like it's like you're sitting in on the sessions with them as they're working things out in the very beginning. Right. And it's got that kind of a vibe to it. There are times, like, you know what it's like when you listen to an album. It could be a lot of solo albums where you need a real kick-ass rocker. Like like with Walls and Bridges, you need What You Got on that album.
Right.
You know, you're waiting for what you, as much as I love the other stuff, you kind of feel that way sometimes with side two of Men Love Avenue. Give me a rocker, you know.
Yeah.
Everything is slow, you know, it's mid-tempo, and you know, you need something to pick it up, but there's still great songs and the great recordings of them.
Right. Yeah. You know, listening to side two, I earlier again today was, you know, Nobody Loves You, and he gets to the part where he's singing, you know, when he gets up in the morning, and he just can't get that, you know, that vocal out, because it's probably either like the first or second time, you know, he's doing that track in the studio. So, so maybe his voice isn't adjusted to what, you know, how he wants to bring it out. So just hearing that kind of stuff, you know, early on in the studio really, you know, really gets me excited. But, Kit, any, standouts on side B?
Well, I think as Ken just said, Bless You is one of my favorite John songs, period. So to hear another, you know, an earlier version of it, and, you know, let's face it, it's imperfect. I mean, his vocals are not perfect, but it just made it even better, in my opinion, because it was, he sounded kind of fragile in the song, and that's how he felt at the time. And, you know, really reflected what was going on with his, you know, his troubled relationship with Yoko and the whole thing. So, you know, that performance, I mean, I still love the final version, don't get me wrong, but I like this earlier version that really, as I said, reveals the vulnerability that he shows in the lyrics. So that was great. Steel and Glass, I thought, was incredible. His voice is just aching, you know. Really, you could hear it. You know, I like the stripped down, and I'm just kind of, that's my thing anyway. I love stripped down arrangements like this, and you know, this is a great example of why. I mean, that you just feel his pain on that track, and you know, so there are some cuts like that. Sure, we've heard them before. We've heard the final versions. But hearing these early ones, you know, reveals even more about what his intentions were, you know, in writing those songs. And it just, yeah, Steel and Glass. I mean, I was listening to that in the car, and I mean, it practically just makes you want to pull off the road and really listen, because it's just such a startling, you know, performance. Scared is the same way, by the way. Yeah. That's another one that I thought, I mean, he sounds scared on this version. I mean, you know, that imperfect voice, which when I say imperfect voice, I mean, for any other singer,
right,
it would be a, you know, final take, but this is John Lennon we're talking about.
Right.
I'm glad you mentioned the stripped down approach here, because we're living in a time where I think many of us are fascinated by this, and I'm glad that you mentioned Steel and Glass, and also Scared, because those are two very produced songs on Walls and Bridges in terms of orchestration, in terms of all the horns, and yet you don't hear any of that here. So it's just a whole different feel altogether when it's that raw. And right. I love both versions.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm not saying one's better than the other necessarily, right. but right. they're, as you said, that's right. Completely different feel.
Right. Yeah. And you know, go ahead, Ken.
I just wanted to, it just reminded me, we didn't bring this up, but for some reason, I'm remembering now in one of our previous shows not long ago, for some reason, we were talking about maybe things we wanted to have released as far as George Harrison music is concerned. And with the Cloud Nine album, one of our listeners suggested have it without Jeff Lynne production.
Yeah, that's right.
That'd
yeah.
be interesting.
So I hadn't thought about that. You know, I mean, a lot of people would love to hear All Things Must Pass without the Phil Spector production. It's kind of like the same thing. But when you're so used to hearing these songs with orchestration or with horns, and suddenly they're not there, they have a whole different feel and a whole different life to them.
Right.
So, I'm glad you mentioned those two songs. I just triggered that.
I do kind of remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do I. Yeah. All three of us are agreeing that we really enjoy, quite a bit, a lot of tracks on this release, and it's kind of a shame that this album isn't really taken seriously in the Lennon catalog, because, you know, when they did the reissues in the 2000s, the 90s, this wasn't included in those reissue campaigns. And then in 2010, when that box, or was it 2009 or 2010, when that box that came out, this wasn't included.
I think it was 2010, but yeah, I could
2010. Yeah. Signature box.
Yeah.
2010.
Right. And so that, and this wasn't included in that either. So, I kind of feel bad for this album, that kind of like it's almost forgotten in a way. I mean, people maybe just don't take it as seriously as they do, the other stuff, obviously. But, there are a lot of hidden gems here on this album.
Well, and I was looking too. I mean, it isn't available on any streaming services.
Right.
Is it out of print?
No, it's still available on Amazon, actually.
It's
still in print. Yeah, it's still in print. Yeah. But it's just not included in those, the Lennon catalog, like the rest of the albums are.
Well, the thing is, as you get more and more reissues, some of these songs turn up somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like,
yeah.
Here We Go Again was in the U.S. versus John Lennon.
Right. Yeah. Angel Baby, Since My Baby Loved Me and To Know Her is on the Rock and Roll bonus tracks.
Right. That came out in the 2000s.
Yeah, exactly.
So. So that's how you have to find those songs. But the Walls and Bridges material, nowhere else other than on Menlo Avenue.
Right.
That's true. I just think it reveals a whole new side to those tracks. And I mean, and as we said, love the final versions. Nothing wrong with the final versions. Mm-hmm. But the stripped down version, really forces you to pay attention to the lyrics, to, appreciate his vocal performance and as I said, I'm just a sucker for stripped down performances like that. And so I think it's a great compliment to Walls and Bridges to hear these early versions.
Mm. Right.
Very true.
I agree.
Yeah.
Now, interesting. Hello, Richard. You've watched our show many times. Thank you so much for tuning in. Said Men Love Avenue is a cool feel, but dark in some places.
Right.
And I think that's an interesting, an interesting comment, because it is a bit darker than, perhaps some of the other releases we've seen, the later releases. I think that's where his head was. At the time he was releasing these, recording these albums. And, maybe that's one of the reasons it didn't do as well. Maybe, as you said, there wasn't like an obvious hit single here, like Nobody Told Me. And there were some dark elements. That's true.
Right. All right. Cool. Anybody, any last words on Men Love Avenue? Ken?
Every Lennon release is worth picking up, and you're always going to discover something like we talked about, these other songs that hadn't turned up on Lennon albums, like Here We Go Again. It's worth it for that alone, we didn't talk much about My Baby Left Me, which I think is really, just a fun track to listen to. It's another one where you question, should it have made rock and roll or not? We're going to fall into that trap. What would you take out? But I'm glad that it's out. And it's mm-hmm. out there for us to discover and explore and enjoy. Right. And, you know, and I'm really, if anything, I'm probably just as grateful, if not more so, for the Walls and Bridges side, because we don't really have that, mm-hmm. say, with, how about a Mind Games set
right.
like that, yeah. you know, with songs that are that, like, early run-throughs, like I said. Mm-hmm. We don't really have that, you mm-hmm. know, being released. So I'd like to hear more of that. It's endless what you can do.
I mean, I think it's, you know, again, this probably does appeal more to the hardcore fans, mm-hmm. but I think it's absolutely, it reveals, you know, a different side to him. It gives you kind of a window into where he was during that period of time. You know, the Walls and Bridges rock and roll, mainly Walls and Bridges rock and roll era. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, just what a strong voice he had. He was, you know, creatively, he was, you know, just firing on all cylinders, and kind of, as I said, you know, refutes some of the whole, oh, the Lost Weekend he did, you know, he did, right. he was so drunk he couldn't do anything. I mean, you know, Mellow Avenue is proof that right. wasn't true. Of course, Walls and Bridges and the album are too, but, you know, it's but this is a great window, I think, into his creative process. And I hope it is reissued and put on streaming services, because, you know, I think it's really worth, you know, worth a listen. There's right. some gems, hidden gems here.
Right. Very cool. All right. Well,
I agree.
This is another hour has just gone by.
Amazing.
It's amazing how it does that. Yeah. Anyways, Kit, why don't you tell everybody how they can, you know, participate in this show and give the contact information for this show before we give our separate information?
Absolutely. You can, we love feedback. We love suggestions. If you guys have any suggestions of topics you'd like us to cover in future episodes, we'd love to hear from you. You guys have so many great ideas that you put in the comments every week. So we'd love to hear more. We love this. So you can email us at talkmoresolotalk@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at TalkMoreTalk1, the number one. And of course, go to our Facebook page. We check it often. We post stuff, sometimes some fun stuff. And, yep. and you know, you can leave messages for us there. We really, really want to hear from you.
Cool. All right. Ken Michaels, what do you got going on these days?
Well, you were just mentioning my live broadcast of Every Little Thing. Yep. Mm-hmm. which is on Wednesday nights on WNHU in West Haven, Connecticut, which you can stream at WNHU.org. It's on at 8:00 Eastern time. I am hoping to tomorrow be interviewing Michael Epstein, who is the director of the new John and Yoko documentary, Above Us Only Sky.
Nice.
If that happens, I will do some very, very fast editing. And on Wednesday night, you're going to hear part of that interview. And
oh, nice.
With songs from the Imagine album. So again, that's this Wednesday night, WNHU.org, 8 p.m. And it's streamed live as I do it. It's only a 1-hour show. And most likely, if I have the interview with Michael Epstein, it'll air in the last half hour.
Okay.
Also on my website, which is KenMichaelsRadio.com, I'm giving away tickets to see the Beatles tribute band, which I know a lot of fans love this band called the Fab Four. They're doing a show in Connecticut and a show in Massachusetts. I have a few days left on my website where you can win a pair of tickets. Easy as pie to win. And then probably in a week or so, I'm giving away pairs of tickets to see the Claypool Lennon Delirium at College Street Music Hall in New Haven in April. Nice. So you can win tickets for that. On my trivia page for 1 week only, you can win Tug of War and Pipes of Peace, the special editions on CD together as one package, as well as so many other great prizes, Egypt Station, Kit's book, songs that we're singing.
Wow.
Which is just, yes.
Just that's happened exactly to have what it, looks it like. Right there.
it's there permanently. It hasn't moved.
What, from my hand? No, it's always on my hand. I can't get rid of this damn thing.
So that's KenMichaelsRadio.com. There's my other podcast show, Things We Said Today. We just did a brand new interview with Brian Southall, who's written a whole bunch of Beatle books. He just wrote something on the White Album. That new show is on podbean.com. It's also on our YouTube channel and iTunes, Things We Said Today. So if you want to catch that, it's already out there. Okay?
Yeah. Cool.
That about does it.
All right. Well, in my world, the two legs world, David and I just posted our latest episode last night. As a matter of fact, we talk about the Wildlife Archive box set, and we also, kind of tussle a little bit about the deluxe Egypt Station suitcase. You know, he's kind of against it, but I'm kind of for it. So, you know, and we also have our show with the interview we did with Jeff Cummings a few weeks back, where he talks about all the great artwork he did for Paul McCartney. So you can go to podbean.com, type in two legs, and that's the number two, and you'll see our logo right there, and you can check them out right there. You can email us at twolegspodcast@gmail.com, and you can check us out on Facebook at Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. And that's what we got going on right now. And Miss O'Toole, birthday girl, what's going on in your world?
Well, I have new Deep Beatles that went up on my birthday, actually, about Your Blues. It's the last in my Salute to the White album. People ask me, why did I post that on my birthday? Do I have the blues? No, I do not. It's just an awesome song. What can I tell you? So that's up. And also, my last Deep Soul, I did a tribute to James Ingram. So maybe we'll check that out. I'll be doing another Bottomless Soul probably March 18th, somewhere around there. And so that, I'll give you more information when I know about that. But in the meantime, you can check me out on my website, which you can see right there, kidotool.com. You can look me up on Facebook and Twitter, Kid O'Toole on Twitter, and find out what crazy things I'm up to. So you can find me everywhere. And somebody just asked early on, and I apologize, it's scroll. Oh, no, here it is. Richard asks, let's see, come on, show up on the screen. There we go. Will you all be at the fest this year? Ken Michaels, Ken Womack, and I will be there. Tom, unfortunately, it really sucks. You have to work and can't get away from this. But we're hoping to come into Chicago.
Who's he working with? Show the shirt there.
Oh, yes. Well, yeah. last week, I got to cook for Bob Seger twice, you know, once here in Phoenix and then in Vegas, you know, so that was fun. You know, it's work, but it's still fun. And, you know, at times, especially when you, when you really like the artist that you're cooking for. So it was good.
That's cool. That's
very cool.
So, the three of us will be there. We will be doing a panel, and we'll tell you more about that. The schedule, I think, comes out next week or something. That's what I heard. So as soon as we know more details, we will let you guys know what the story is.
Okay. No one said a word about my Press to Play shirt.
Oh, my gosh.
I meant to say.
Check it out, guys. Have you ever seen a Press to Play shirt? I never have. I must get one.
I got this when the album first came out.
Wow.
And no one has any idea how tight this is on me right now. I'm not the same weight as I was in 1986.
Can you breathe or are you okay?
Yeah. Did you have to lie down to put it on?
But I don't throw out any of my t-shirts.
Mm-hmm. Obviously.
Yep. See, this is how much we care about you guys. You know, we'll withstand physical pain so that you know how serious we are.
Uh-huh. Oh, man. Only if I had my Imagine John Lennon movie shirt from 1988.
Oh, wow.
When I was, 100 pounds lighter, I would have tried to that. Baby.
I still have an extra t-shirt. Mm-hmm. Extra
oh, really? Oh, wow.
It goes down to half of my stomach at this point.
Yeah, put that on next week, Ken.
No.
Let's see.
We'll have a whole new audience.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, man.
And on that note,
speaking of that, another hour has just flew by. So, for my friends Ken Michael, Dr. Kid O'Toole, I'm Tom Hunyadi asking that age-old question, can she do it like she dances? Take care, everybody.
Talk More Talk.